new documentary by Robert Stone traces the history of the modern environmental movement through the lives of 9 pioneering Americans. Titled Earth Days, the film reaches as far back as the post-war America of the 1950s, the 1962 publication of Rachel Carson's seminal book Silent Spring, and the first ever Earth Day, marked in 1970. With vintage footage and stunning visual panoramas, Earth Days follows the vision and the fate of people like one-time Secretary of the Interior Stuart Udall, futurist Stuart Brand, former Congressman Pete McCloskey, nonprofit leader Hunter Lovins, and others. It highlights the successes, but also the failures of the movement. The New York Times reviewed Earth Days, calling it a, quote, beautifully composed tribute to visionary thinking and political ingenuity, a timeline of peaks and valleys stretching from the early initiatives of the 50s to the legislative successes of the 70s. Robert Stone wrote, produced, and directed Earth Days. His earlier film credits include Oswald's Ghost and Gorilla, the Taking of Patty Hearst. He joins me in studio. Welcome to Uprising.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much for joining us. Now, you start your film Earth Days by showing a series of clips of various presidents, American presidents over the years, one after the other declaring the importance of protecting the Earth, including Bush Sr. and Bush Jr. Why did you choose to open your film in that way?
Well, I wanted to start the film in a sort of unusual way, not just to set up what the film is going to be about, but to give a sense that we've been talking about the environment for a long, long time now. And I think the environment is fodder for soaring political rhetoric. But as the film points out, it's been a long time. We've known about this for a long. We've known our problems for a long time. Yet here we are in 2009 at this moment of environmental crisis. So the film is really about how we got here.
I was quite surprised by the role of Nixon, who seemed to try very hard to jump on the environmental bandwagon. What was sort of Nixon's relationship to the then budding environmental movement?
Yeah, well, I'll start by saying I never imagined in my life I would make a film that actually presents a sort of favorable a favorable portrait of Nixon.
Well, partially favorable.
It is partially favorable. Look, Nixon was a very clever politician. He was responding to a massive grassroots uprising. Appropriate we're on the show, uprising this morning. It really was. I mean, 20 million Americans took to the streets on Earth Day 1970. It was the largest demonstration in American history, 10% of the U.S. population. Be the equivalent of, in a single day, 40 million Americans going out in the street and demanding change. That was a political earthquake in this country. It totally changed the dynamics of how environmental issues were treated by the government. And Nixon was no friend to the environment, but he saw it to his political advantage to cater to this upswell of interest, from the grassroots. And he was also looking forward to the next presidential election, where he saw he was going to go up against Edmund Muskie, who was a leader of the environmental movement. So he wanted to defuse that. But, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what motivated him. The fact of the matter is he signed into law the most sweeping series of pro-environmental legislation of any president ever.
Earth Days, by the way, is opening tomorrow in theaters across Southern California, including the Sunset 5 in West Hollywood, the Pasadena Playhouse 7, Lumley Monica 4 in Santa Monica, Encino Town Center, as well as in Irvine, Laguna Niguel, and Palm Springs. And we'll list that entire set of screenings on our website later at kpfk.org/uprising. Well, speaking of the very first Earth Day, I want to play an excerpt of your film Earth Days that starts by showing out the media coverage even at that time of the very first Earth Day. In retrospect, a little amusing. But also, as you said, 20 million people across the entire country came out in various parts of the country. Let's take a listen to Earth Days.
Some quarters saw more than coincidence in the fact that Earth Day occurred on the 100th anniversary of the birth of Lenin, the father of Soviet communism. The Comptroller General of Georgia, James Bentley, sent out $1,600 worth of telegrams warning that Earth Day might be a communist plot.
There were certainly people who had their pet causes. Some pounded vehicles apart with sledgehammers as a protest against the internal combustion engine. Others wore gas masks to protest air pollution. But also there was an almost celebratory thing, as though suddenly we were awakening to a new set of opportunities.
They are talking about emission control devices on automobiles, while we are talking about bans on automobiles. We are challenging the ethics of a society that, with only 6% of the world's population, accounts for more than half of its utilization of resources. Our country is stealing from the poorer countries of the world and from generations as yet unborn.
To me, Earth Day was life-changing. There were, around the country, millions of people engaging in some act of caring for the Earth. I realized that there was a massive group of people who cared very deeply about the Earth, and if organized, could be a viable political movement. At that point, I ceased to be an anti-war activist and became an environmentalist.
An excerpt of the film Earth Days. The woman's voice we just heard is Hunter Lovins. She's one of nine people who are profiled in the film as a look into the past, both successes as well as eventually a few failures of the environmental movement. The film, written, produced, and directed by Robert Stone, my guest in studio. Robert, this excerpt from the film shows an interesting snapshot of the history of the movement. And I want to ask you how many of the people that you profiled in the film started out as sort of being radical, anti-establishment, wanting to ban cars, not just control emissions. Mm-hmm. But then some of them ended up being part of the establishment to help pass some of the most important environmental laws of our time. How did that happen? And was that, in retrospect, a good thing or a bad thing?
That's a great question. What happened with in the wake of Earth Day, when this sweeping legislation came through, a lot of the people in the environmental movement who were leaders in the environmental movement did move into positions of power, and these small organizations that had been out ahead of the whole movement became sort of large lobbying organizations in Washington. They became huge. The Sierra Club, which was a marginal organization before this, became a huge organization in Washington, and a number of other groups. I think one of the dangers, one of the bad things that happened, is the movement moved from being a grassroots popular movement to one that was being led by environmental activists, certain members of the political class, and scientists. And I think a lot of people thought, moving into the late 70s, that, okay, we have the EPA, we have all these laws on the books. If I can sign my check to the Sierra Club once in a while, people just sort of outsourced their activism in a sense. And it became kind of a battle between powerful lobbying groups in Washington, corporate industrial lobbying groups versus environmental lobbying groups. And the corporate industrial lobbying groups were always able to outspend the environmental lobbying groups, and a backlash ensued against the environmental movement, and Ronald Reagan kind of personified that in coming to power in 1980, really sort of ended that first burst of environmental activism.
I want to talk about Reagan, but I want to step back a little bit in time as well, in terms of what led up to that first Earth Day. There were you chronicle in your film the whole Earth movement, the Back to the Land movement, mm-hmm. the communes of the 60s, which were sort of laying the seeds for the environmental movement. And one of the people you feature in your film sort of looks back at the naivety of that movement. There's still people who mm-hmm. Who you might sort of put in that same category. Was it mostly sort of a liberal utopians, or were they really naive, or were they really wise?
Well, I think a little bit of both. I mean, look, if you want to change society on a large systemic level to make our whole presence on the earth as human beings more in tune and in sync with the ecosystem, rejecting society and going off into a little commune is not really going to do it. We need large systemic changes. So it was naive, but that said, it was I think one of the many forces that came together in this remarkable moment in time was this questioning of some of the real fundamental underpinnings of values of our society. Now, maybe that was a naive and like a little extreme, but it was part of the mix that came together at that moment.
Do you think it was sort of part of a necessary evolution, a sort of stage that people had to go through?
I think so, yeah. I think it was.
Let's go back even earlier to Rachel Carson's book in 1960. Her voice very much preserved in the Pacifica Radio Archives. She's somebody that Pacifica listeners are quite familiar with. Maybe some young environmentalists today have never even heard of Silent Spring, her book that really, about pesticides, that really many point to as the first major environmental book. What role did she play, not just in sort of waking up Americans to the danger that are facing the earth, but even members of Congress and the government?
Rachel Carson is a pivotal person in the environmental movement, because before that you had the conservation movement, which was largely preserving wilderness areas. What Rachel Carson did was say that we as a species, through our technology and our presence on this planet, are actually harming the ecosystem that we need to live on. We're actually poisoning the planet itself. And that sort of broadened the whole idea of what environmentalism is. She was vilified by the chemical industry at the time. They launched a huge PR campaign, really saying that, on a personal attack against her, saying she was a hysterical woman. She didn't know what she was talking about. And Stuart Udall, who's featured in the film, who was Kennedy's Secretary of the Interior at the time, gave Kennedy a copy of the book. Kennedy read the book, was very moved by it, came out and supported Rachel Carson, and set up a panel of scientists to examine her studies, examine her work, which confirmed that it actually was true. And that, you know, after that happened, it became a huge international bestseller and a huge influence on the public, and ended up leading to the ban on DDT and a number of other things later on.
One of the, to me, most horrifying moments in your film is the footage that you show when talking about Rachel Carson's book. This footage of giggling children in the 50s and 60s being sprayed with pesticide while eating their school lunches,
sure,
while
yeah.
swimming in a pool.
Yeah. Well, DDT was sprayed all over this country, and indeed all over the world. And one of the things that was discovered in the early 1960s that Rachel Carson pointed out was that every living thing on the planet, every living organism had DDT in its fat cells now. That's how widespread this had become.
And that leads me to asking you about the visual aspect of the film Earth Days. You found some incredible footage, some very high-quality footage. What was that? Why was that important? And how did you go about collecting the vintage footage from the 50s, 60s, 70s to put into this film?
Well, it was a huge job, and I'm glad you recognize that. It was, I mean, first and foremost, I'm making a film. It had to be cinematic. It had to engage people on a visual and emotional level. So
it's not just talking heads.
It's not talking heads. No, it's a story that's focused around these nine individuals, but it's not talking heads. It's a very visual film, and very colorful. We started off, it was going in another direction. We started off looking at a lot of news footage from that talked about the literal history of what was being said, and the story. That ended up not being an avenue that was really satisfying to me, and we ended up broadening it out and using more contemporary visuals as well as historical footage. So it's a real mixture of using imagery that's more poetic, that's kind of... If you see the image and then you hear what's being said and the music and all, it's come together. The visuals are not necessarily a literal representation of what's being talked about, but they allow your mind to start to expand and to think about things in a different way. And that's really what happened in this period of awakening to the crisis, was largely a new perception of the world around us, a new perception of reality that was, you know, articulated best by those amazing photographs of the Earth from space, which we began to see in 1969.
Let's talk about Reagan. There were, of course, and are still so many successes that one can point to of the environmental movements starting in the 70s. But then came Reagan. And even though he did talk like every other president about the importance of protecting the environment, he undid
yeah.
so much of what was done.
He actually didn't say that much. The one clip we have is the only clip, the only time he ever mentioned.
Okay.
But no, I mean, you can't blame it entirely on Reagan. Reagan was articulating a movement. What was amazing, we found this incredible footage that I'd never seen before of Reagan when he announced his candidacy for the presidency. In 1979, it was like a 20-minute infomercial produced by the Republican Party. And in it, he basically lays out the reason that he wants to become president is to undo the environmental movement. And that was a major reason for him seeking the presidency. And he's quite articulate in saying that his perception of the environmental movement, I think the perception of a lot of Americans at that time, that it was putting constraints on the American dream, and nothing should limit our ability to do whatever we want to do. And mm-hmm. he sort of wanted to go back to the 1950s and just say everything's fine. He ultimately dismantled the solar panels on the roof of the White House that Jimmy Carter put up.
Finally,
symbolic gesture. Yeah.
Robert Stone, what is the importance, you think, of knowing the history of the environmental movement?
Well, I think like anything else, those who don't know their history are condemned to repeat it. The environmental movement has been a very forward-looking enterprise. It's just the nature of it. But I think knowing this, most people now are getting bombarded with one crisis after another, lots of information about the environment. What I attempt to do in this film is to put all of this, to step back a bit, put all of this in some sort of larger context about how we arrived at this moment where we are now. There's no way we can find our way forward without knowing how we got here.
And you can certainly find that out in Earth Days, the new film we're talking about. Writer, producer, and director Robert Stone has been joining me in studio. Thanks so much for joining us. Best of luck to you and the film.
Thanks very much.
Earth Days can be found online at earthdaysmovie.com, and it's opening tomorrow in theaters across Southern California, including the Sunset 5 in West Hollywood, Pasadena Playhouse 7, Lemley Monica 4. And you can also check our website later today for a full listing at uprising, kpfk.org/uprising. For Sonali, Subversive Thought for the Day, Wendell Berry once said, "The care of the earth is our most ancient and most worthy, and after all, our most pleasing responsibility. To cherish what remains of it and to foster its renewal is our only hope." That's Wendell Berry. That's Sonali, Subversive Thought for the Day.